From the sports betting capital of the world, Las Vegas, it's time for the show you can't afford to miss. The number one weekly football preview, Wanna Bet. Get ready for valuable information, analysis, winning picks, and betting strategies. Your hosts, SEC gridiron guru Kip Kiefer, and award-winning betting expert, writer, and sports editor for the Las Vegas Sun, Case Kiefer. Let's go. Here's everything you need to win big. Wanna Bet.
Welcome, everybody. It's time for Wanna Bet. Kip Kiefer, Case Kiefer, coming to you from the Superbook at Westgate Las Vegas. A fantastic place if you're a sports betting enthusiast. A must-see on your list if you make it out here to the capital of sports betting in the country, Las Vegas. Case, we've been going through a number of weeks here on all kinds of various topics. Today I want to touch on maybe a little bit of an abstract subject, but I think it's not one that a lot of people think about, that the conventional sports bettors. But I happen to think that maybe this is one of the areas that you can really become proficient and successful, and that is if you're a straight bettor and you're playing your overall game, talk about a little bit the options of first half and second half betting, which I don't know if a lot of players really utilize that, but in my experience, it seems like if you're watching how a game's unfolding in the first half, it gives you a pretty good idea of what to expect in the second.
Yeah, well, I think it's gotten a lot more popular, hugely popular, I think especially here in Las Vegas with people that are watching the games live at a sports book, but also so easy to do now with mobile wagering. It's just another way to bet the game, and especially a little bit smaller market, so could be easier to capitalize on. I know a lot of people like having that sample size of what happens in the first half and then put it into the second half. Usually those spreads are a lot of times just a variation of the full game, so certainly there are some opportunities there, and there are some people that really make their bread and butter going after those. I tend to like having the full game sample. It's just, having a little more time to see what you ultimately think is going to play out, but that does not mean that there's not value there, and it's certainly a tool that bettors can utilize, and hopefully to their benefit.
I guess my interest in and we've been tying everything back to the numbers and analytics. Are there any indicators, or do you ever have a sense in looking at a game and the matchup of which team is going to get off to a good start, or which team has a background where they perform better at the beginning of games and things change? Are there numbers that indicate, in those matchups, how a game might trend?
Yeah, I mean, certainly you can find all those numbers easily. I think the biggest issue and the thing you have to figure out is you have to kind of filter out what's noise and what's actually sustainable. I feel like I've said this a lot, but, football, when we get down to it, is still a pretty small sample size sport. Like a college football regular season is 12 games, and that's the nature of the sport. But compared to baseball, where there's 162 games, you can see a lot more trends develop. So a lot of times I think these hot starts, if it's one or two games, it's kind of hard to say that this actually means something. But if you're confident, if you watch it and you decide that, you can try to exploit that. You can certainly find the splits, and sometimes there are some things there. I think, famously the coaches who, work better in scripting plays and are really good play callers that have that really good opening script, they're a team you want to bet on over time. And then there's some coaches that over many years, so we no longer have that sample size problem, see their teams not play as well in the second half, which of course then would indicate that they're not as good at halftime adjustments. Those are all things you can look at. I'd say the tricky part is just deciding what of this is actually predictive and I can apply that's going to make sense going forward, and what of it is more just randomness. I do think a lot of it is randomness, but certainly there are some cases where it makes sense. That's not, I think, funnily enough, I think Alabama is the famous example, because they have just killed first half lines for many years. I think last year actually it kind of came down to earth, if I believe so. But, for like 3 years, they just have such a talent advantage over everyone, such a great coach, so such a great plan. They covered these first half lines like nothing. I think now the market, the bookmakers have started to adjust and made the first half line less of a variation of the game spread and made you pay more of a premium. You got to kind of realize that, and you got to know when it's time that the gravy train's over and when it's time to buy off and either go to the other side or stay away. So it's another tricky part, but it's certainly something that you can all factor into your handicap.
Yeah, it's came to mind as you were describing that about Alabama. The classic example of that last year was the game at Florida in Gainesville, where the Gators came out and did nothing right. Alabama could do no wrong and looked like they were just tremendously better than the Gators. I think the score was, a blowout almost, like 27-10 at halftime. And Florida came back and dominated the second half and almost won the game.
Yeah, for sure. I think that, you always have to look at the motivation for the second half. That is important. A lot of times, even if you have a 27-10 lead, not necessarily saying Alabama, but someone else, if you think it's a coach that's going to let off the gas a little bit, I'd always probably more like to be aligned with the team that is going to be pushing, that's going to be going for the whole time, going for that win. So that's an important thing to look at in the second half.
Because, again, from the betting standpoint, I'm sure, again, the numbers indicate it, but also the good old-fashioned eye test is a good indicator, because there are certain coaches that get a big lead, and maybe it's just reputation, but it seems like, and you use the perfect phrase there, they take their foot off the gas pedal. They just want to shorten the game and get it over with and get out of there with a win. And it's good to kind of have a book on that. Steve Spurrier, famously, in his career, seemed like he stepped on the gas more when he got the lead. So from a betting standpoint, there's so many things to consider, but that's why I find the whole specter of trying to put together plays really intriguing.
Yeah, and I think the first thing you need to realize that I think maybe some recreational people don't even think about before making a second half bet is you need to know who's receiving the kickoff. It sounds kind of ridiculous and basic, but you're going to have one more possession right away for that team. So usually you're going to want to apply a little bit of an adjustment to the team that's getting the ball, and then you need to think about those other things of who's going to be pushing for points, what are each team's strategies going to be, try to get into the mind of the coach, so to speak, the mind of the team, and see what they're going to do. It's not an easy thing to do, but if you want to bet second halves, I think all that's important.
So from your observations of the inner workings of the books themselves here, we use the Alabama-Florida game as an example, 27-10 at halftime. Alabama in the game was, I think, a 13 or 14 point favorite playing in Gainesville, which seemed, for me, a home dog is still an attractive option in a lot of cases in football. But how is the line on the second half calculated in that circumstance where one team's way ahead? Can you give us any insight on how that number is determined?
It all just goes back to the market thing, and ultimately it's a model at one of these major sports books that inputs everything that happened in the first half so they can spit out what they think is the right number immediately for the second half. And honestly, I guess it's kind of a dirty little secret, not a dirty little secret. It's really just one originator that's doing this, then everyone else is just copying them and posting it. They'll move aggressively on their action. Obviously, you have, 15, 20 minutes for a second half line, so it's not going to take as much action as all through the week, but it just takes one or two bets. You'll start moving that a half point. Maybe you get some buyback on the other side, but it's all just really condensed, and really that number is just coming from one place in the end, and it's everyone else copying it.
Well, it's an interesting thing to try first, and you can have a bet on the game, then you can bet the first half, and then you can make adjustments the second half. And we've kind of hit on the theme throughout this series that making adjustments is a good way to go. So there's just so many different ways to do that. That's our installment for this week on sports betting. The stuff you're really wanting to see is coming up next, because Case Kiefer has his picks right after this.
Hey, it's Case Kiefer here for this week's Best Bets on Wanna Bet. Not too much of a preamble. Let's just get straight into the picks, starting with college football, where I went 2-1 last week, 1 point away from the sweep, so that was hard to swallow, but 18-17-2 on the year. Have three picks today and one bonus. Let's start in the Big Ten. I'm going to take Minnesota -2.5. Iowa now in the driver's seat to get to the Big Ten championship game. But man, this is just such a pathetic offense. They did beat Wisconsin easily last week. I think it was 24-6, but you look at what they did offensively, and it was absolutely nothing. Barely 2 yards per play. I think I saw a stat this week, one of the least efficient offensive game, if you use that metric, yards per play in a win over the last 20 years. People have kind of forgotten about Minnesota, but they were super hot at the beginning of the year. Have kind of dealt with injuries, especially a quarterback, but Tanner Morgan is expected back this week. Look, I think the Hawkeyes took a little bit too much heat mid-year when they were getting blown out. That was the really tough portion of their schedule when they were unlucky to draw both Ohio State
State and Michigan from the other side. Also faced Illinois during their hot streak. And, so then I thought it created a buy low opportunity on them. Had backed them a lot. I don't know if I did on the show, but if you read the columns, and now they've been on a run. I think they've covered four in a row, and I think it's time to flip the other way now. I think it's time to sell high, so to speak. Minnesota hasn't lived up to how good they looked early in the season, but I think this is a good spot for them at less than a field goal. It's not going to be fun to watch, but that's kind of a theme with this week's picks, a little bit of a hold your breath, but I like Minnesota -2.5 here. Next, let's go to the AAC, where I feel like I'm making picks every week on the show. This is a conference where I felt like I've had a really good reads throughout the year. So let's hope this is another one. I'm going to take Houston +6 at East Carolina. I just thought this line was like 3 points too high. I think this is a really evenly matched game. I get it. East Carolina is probably the safer side, or safe is probably not the right word, but kind of the more well put together side. They're well coached. They don't make a lot of mistakes. But from a talent perspective, Houston is still, if not a little bit more than them, I think it's even. They've just, had problems all year with penalties, turnovers. Every one of their games is wild. I don't know if you saw the game a couple weeks ago that was in the 70s with SMU, where they ultimately lost, but that was a game where they really moved the ball well, but just had some turnover issues. I think 6 is just too much. I think this will be another shootout, but I like Clayton Tune. It's a guy that seems like he's been in college forever. I think he can keep up with Holden Ahlers. I don't think this will be an easy one by any means, and like I said, it's always risky when you feel like you're getting the sloppier team, the not as well-coached team, but I think 6 is just too much here. So Houston +6 at East at Carolina, and you've heard nothing yet if you think those two will be tough to root for, because I have a real ugly underdog in the final pick. I'm going to go with Miami +19 at Clemson, probably the biggest game this week that I'm touching on. Hey, I mean, coming into the year, it looked like this line might only be 7. I think the game of the year line was 9 going into the season. 10 more points now. And yeah, Miami's been terrible, so it might be justified. But, the Hurricanes looked a little bit better last week. And I think the worst stretch of their season, starting with the second half where they lost to Middle Tennessee State and then I think lost the next 2 weeks, was when Jake Garcia was in at quarterback. That's not going to be the case anymore. They went to Ja'Cory Brooks, I believe, last week. That kind of gave a new dimension to their offense, more of a running quarterback, and that was probably their best game of the year. They're not saying whether it's going to be him or Tyler Van Dyke starting this week. Van Dyke also back healthy. Now, I'm thinking it's Brooks after what he's shown, but if it's Van Dyke, I guess we'll trust that's okay too. I just, talent-wise, this is just not a 19-point game. I'm not a big fan of Mario Cristobal. I don't think Miami's good or anything, but this just kind of seems like where the cycle repeats, where maybe they show some progress here at the end of the year. People talk themselves into them at the beginning of next year again, and we can bet against them again then. I just think 19, a little too high. That's a huge adjustment. Clemson has their own issues, so I'm going to go with Miami +19. And how about a bonus pick? I know I don't try to toe too deep into the SEC water since Kip does that, but I think I've hit the bonus pick or two I've done on the SEC throughout the year, so I have a strong opinion on one of the bigger games. This week I'm going to just lock in Arkansas +2.5. This is basically, more or less the same line last week against LSU. We know LSU's a lot better than Ole Miss, and just situationally, I don't like this spot for Ole Miss at all, with a game that meant so much to them last week. Now going to Arkansas, who it looks like KJ Jefferson will play. I think they're really going to put everything into this game. I would not be surprised if they close a favorite once we get some of the injury information coming in. So I'm going to go Arkansas +2.5. Now let's get to the NFL, where at least on one of bet, I've been a little bit better this year, 17-14-1, and it's been a lot of underdogs in the NFL all year, and this isn't by design, but just a lot of underdogs I like again this week. It feels like every game that I have a strong opinion on is the underdog. So three underdogs this week. Let's start with a common theme. We've been fading the Falcons over and over for about the last few weeks. I'm going to do it again here. I'm going to take Chicago +3.5. I feel like a lot of times on the show I'm saying, oh, I got this at a better number earlier in the week. Well, I got to be full transparency, and sometimes it's the other way too. I kind of blew it here. I took Chicago +3 was one of the first bets bets I made all week. Clearly, too quick of a trigger finger. I could have gotten the extra half point, the most key half point in sports betting, but I didn't wait. So I only have three, but you can get plus 3.5 now. This just seems like such a swing. The Bears were the flavor of the week last week. I bet against them with the Lions. I can't remember if I used that one on the show, but everyone was just on the Bears and the progress they had made offensively, which I agreed with. They still have some defensive questions, but just because they lost one game where there was a bad pick six, but they're still, you know, it was the highest scoring game of the week. I don't think all that progress is erased. I'm really surprised they're this big of a dog at the Falcons. I think this is a pretty fair game, but I like the Bears' upside a little bit better. I think they're really trending in the right direction, so give me Chicago plus 3.5 and two primetime games to finish. I already kind of ruined it that I like the underdogs, but how about the Chargers plus 6 hosting the Chiefs? The Chargers getting a lot of people back this week, finally going to be healthy, the healthiest they've been since the Week 2 meeting with the Chiefs, where if you remember, they ended up losing by a touchdown. But really, the whole difference in that game was the 99-yard interception return when Gerald Everett was just so exhausted and couldn't get to the pass they threw to him in the end zone. Jalen Watson returns at 99 yards. Other than that, this was a very even game, and I think the Chargers at full strength are not a touchdown worse than the Chiefs, let alone at home. I know they don't have much of a home field advantage, but plus 6 too much for me. So Chargers plus 6. And then finally, another team I'm fading a lot lately, not because they're not good. I like the 49ers a lot. I can see them being a Super Bowl contender, but this offense just isn't that good. I think their spreads are inflated week after week, so I'm going to go Arizona plus 8 in Mexico City on Monday Night Football. If Kyler Murray does play, this is a steal. And even if he doesn't, Colt McCoy has been one of the best backups in the NFL over the last couple of years. Maybe that comes crashing down here, but he was pretty good last week. He's been good lately, so I'm going to go ahead and take my chances at above a touchdown. If Kyler Murray does play, this will be going below a touchdown. So let's lock in plus 8 now with Arizona. Stick around for a Kip's breakdown of the SEC. Thanks for listening and watching. Wanna bet?
Hey, everybody, it's Kip Kiefer. You know, on all of our shows, we're in the business of picking winners. But selecting the champions of real estate, particularly downtown, well, that's easy. It's Lita D'Imperio and Carrie Smith, the dream team at Realty South. 205-937-2232 is the phone number to call if you want to get in the game of fabulous downtown living. Welcome, everybody. It's Kip Kiefer with this weekend's SEC report, and a lot to talk about this week. Some major storylines still lingering from a week ago. We already know who the teams are going to be on December the 3rd in Atlanta for the SEC championship game. One of them we all expected. The other one, I don't think anybody predicted. Georgia Bulldogs won the East Division. They have dismantled all of their opponents. They knocked off Mississippi State handily last week in Starkville. And the LSU Tigers, we predicted they would struggle in that game at Arkansas last week and didn't even know at the time that KJ Jefferson, Arkansas's quarterback, wasn't going to be able to play. And still LSU only beat them 13-10 in a game that frankly, they were pretty lucky to win, but it did lock up the West Division. So it'll be Georgia, it'll be LSU, and the early line on that game is Georgia a 16-point favorite in the SEC championship game, a very large spread. So nobody is really giving LSU a chance to go up there and take care of the Bulldogs. Now, both teams reacted a little bit different, and that affects my mindset a tad for this week's game. And the picks. We had a good week last week. We had Ole Miss plus the points and, of course, had Arkansas in the LSU game. So coming off some momentum, hopefully we can keep it going. LSU goes back home. They are hosting the UAB Blazers. Now, that might not sound like much, but UAB is not a cupcake team. They are legitimately a very competitive college football outfit. They go into LSU where they actually won in Tiger Stadium back in 2001, and they are getting 14.5 points. I can't imagine LSU being too inspired or that interested in playing a non-conference opponent
coming off two huge wins in a row that locked up the West Division. And more evidence of that right after the game at Arkansas, the LSU players openly celebrating winning the West Division and having the opportunity to go to Atlanta. That's what's on their minds. I think UAB's in a very good spot to go in there and take care of business and cover that 14.5-point spread. Georgia, on the other hand, coming off the field very professionally, methodically after beating Mississippi State. And when their head coach Kirby Smart was asked by the sideline reporter, it's going to be you guys and LSU in the Atlanta in a couple of weeks. What are your thoughts? Kirby looked at her sternly and said, don't go there. Don't ask me that. We still got two more games. We got to prepare for Kentucky, a tough place to play, an SEC road game. That's all that's on our mind right now. So Georgia going to Kentucky, I think they will prepare, and I think they will be ready because their eyes not on Atlanta so much as the big prize, trying to repeat as national champions. However, 22.5-point favorites at Kentucky. This is a game that some experts said would be Georgia's Waterloo this year. Kentucky has been a major disappointment. I would be shocked if the Cats don't muster some kind of big effort here to try to salvage what has been a very disappointing season. Whenever you get the number one team in America in your stadium, it brings out big efforts, and I think that's what you're going to see from this Wildcats team this week. They're going to muster up everything they can to try to stay close to Georgia. So I am going to take Kentucky plus the 22.5 points. Every time I've doubted Georgia's ability to cover big spreads this year, it's blown up in our face because Georgia just keeps rolling over everybody. But I'm going to go to the well one more time here because I really feel like that line is awfully high for what was supposed to be a competitive game all season long. A couple other stops. The other big storyline in the SEC, the love fest last week at Jordan-Hare Stadium as Carnell Cadillac Williams, the Auburn interim coach, who was named 2 weeks ago to that spot when Brian Harsin was fired. Auburn just came up with this great effort last week against beleaguered Texas A&M, adding to Jimbo Fisher's woes, his sixth straight loss. I love the statistic that in that game, Carnell Williams netted on kind of a way to prorate salaries about $28,000 for the win for his efforts coaching, whereas Jimbo Fisher cashed in for over $750,000 on his $10 million contract. So a little bit of a disparity in terms of the economic matchup last week. Auburn won the game 13-10. The fans were great at Auburn. Everybody was all excited, and a whole circle of Auburn former players and boosters surrounded the interim coach, and there's a lot of talk that he should be a serious candidate to get the permanent position. I think that talk is going to die down this week, sadly for Cadillac, because they are hosting a very good second division team as well in the Western Kentucky Hilltoppers, who are experienced and used to playing in games with more heralded opponents. They're getting 5.5 against Auburn, and I think Western Kentucky goes into Jordan-Hare and beats Auburn outright. I'm picking Western Kentucky and taking the 5.5 points. And we talked about Ole Miss, kind of discouraging for Lane Kiffin. They had Alabama on the ropes and let them get away, and a win would have kept them alive if somehow LSU stumbled next week at Texas A&M. Ole Miss could have found themselves in Atlanta. And this is an interesting fact. Ole Miss has never been to the SEC championship game. One of the few schools in the SEC that has never made it to the SEC championship, and it is not going to happen this year either. Of course, Lane Kiffin, back to the Auburn storyline, is mentioned as the main guy that they're out to get to see if they can repeat history. Remember in 1999, Tommy Tuberville bolted from Ole Miss and went to Auburn to become their coach. Could history repeat itself here just 20-some-odd years later? Is Lane Kiffin thinking about becoming the Tigers' head man? This weekend, he's got other business. He goes to Arkansas. Arkansas beat up and discouraged after not very stellar season, and Ole Miss is a 2.5-point favorite in that game, and I think their running game is going to be the difference. I think they'll pound the rock and beat down the Razorbacks. I like Ole Miss -2.5. Hopefully we can have another good week and keep you in the win column. I hope everything you do this weekend is outstandingly successful, whether it's football investing or whatever you have planned. We'll be back next week at this same time with more picks and more information on Wanna Bet.